Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Herman Pretorius. Let's get into our first news story of the day, and this is some reporting coming out of News 24, claiming that according to what are described as sources, Jacob Zuma had a recent bad spell of ill health. Sources claim that former President Jacob Zuma's ill health has raised concerns with his medical and security teams after he fell last week. Zuma, who is just turned 82 years old, so he's definitely getting up there, apparently has had a number of sort of dizzy spells related to low blood pressure and has fallen over a couple of times in the past few weeks. However, interestingly, all these so-called sources, we don't know, you know, who they are, how close they are to Zuma, what their names are, anything like that. Zuma's public spokespeople have very aggressively denied all the claims here. There were various excuses given for why he didn't appear at certain events. Everything from, I had a scheduling conflict, to he just didn't feel like he needed to be there, that kind of thing. The only on this record sort of source comment that we get about all of this that seems to speak to Zuma's health is from one of his relatives, who said that he hasn't been sleeping much after the poisoning. Now, this is one of those bizarre stories that many people have forgotten, but in 2014, one of Zuma's wives was accused of poisoning him, and he definitely got very sick all of a sudden in 2014 and seemed to take a while to recover after all of that. However, his family in general have said that this is all rubbish and he's full of energy and life and he's going on as per normal. So, Herman, let me kind of ask you this. On one hand, we have no idea that this is true, but it could be true, right? Old guy, very busy schedule, energetic performance, totally possible that he's not doing that great. He's just a bit tired out because he's been doing so much stuff. But it's kind of difficult to sort of see what the truth here is in this issue. What do you make of the story?
Well, firstly, I think it's quite ironic that wasn't he the guy that was released on medical parole who's now saying he's fine? I think that's quite enchanting and almost charming. I mean, it just makes you aware of the farcical nature of the entire thing. Is the guy who relied on medical parole only a year or two ago is now being claimed to be in excellent health. So yeah, that's a good sign of our functioning parole system. The problem with the situation is, and I think that's why it's important for us to discuss it, is to put both sides out there as you just did. And why I find it particularly interesting and why there might be, you know, some dishonesty and some spreading of false information here is that Zuma's virulency, his energy, his populist appeal, his, you know, father of the Zulu Nation type of ability, and the energy that is needed for a campaign of this nature to be taking place in a province like KwaZulu-Natal, where much of the political campaigning happens in the traditional means of face-to-face, in-person rallying. It is political when it comes to his health, in the sense that this identity of who Zuma is and what he can mean for his party supporters, is very much part of why he has support. So undermining his ability to be this virulent political maverick and disruptor of the system, that would make sense for political opponents. But as you point out, this is someone who has a patchy medical history over the last few years and is 82 years old. So what I would encourage people to do is to keep an eye on this story. Usually with stories of actual fact, you find some evidence, you find repetition of some facts, and there seems to be an emergence of at least a factual framework that you can realistically position a story within. But if it remains the sort of insider's scoop, according to insiders, allegations are, rumors are, then we are likely in the territory of someone's health that might be questionable, but not quite in dire situations, someone's health being used for political gain. And it is worth pointing out that in South Africa, our media isn't awful. We've got relatively free media. We've got investigative journalism to be genuinely proud of. But there's, of course, media bias here. And there are some well-known established interests in the ANC that have managed to use the media in the ANC's favor. So it's worth keeping an eye on both sides of this story and keeping an open mind on it being either political stirring of the excrement or just straightforward fact that an 82-year-old man is having a tough time on the campaign trail.
No, I think that's exactly correct. I think pretty clearly in the next month, we will find out what the truth of this is. As you know, Zuma's active campaign schedule is such a big part of the MK party's kind of appearance and role. And if he suddenly disappears from the stage or if he falls down while giving a rally or something like that, it will become very quickly apparent that these are not just rumors, that there is some truth to them. So we won't have to wait long, but this could be one of those kind of unexpected events that really changes how we have been thinking this election is going to be going. I mean, the emergence of MK itself was a little bit of a shock, I think, to many analysts, myself included. But if you know Zuma suddenly takes ill, it's going to completely, I think, blunt the momentum of that party and maybe throw it into chaos, meaning that the ANC might be able to suddenly claw back a bunch of support at the last minute.
Or and maybe the EFF will be the beneficiary.
And the IFP.
And the so IFP, I think there are many interests that that would be keeping a keen eye on this story. And I think that's exactly the right way to look at it. So let's see if he remains on the campaign trail, because this will likely be a decision made by those around him, his kids, his protectors, his, you know, his political managers. If Zuma does disappear, if he becomes more of a hologram than a presence, you know, we know that there's something up, I think.
You just put into my mind the wonderful idea of a holographic Zuma, which is quite an interesting thought. But let's move on to our next topic. And this is about the ongoing woes in the city of Johannesburg, a city which, in my opinion, as a resident, has suffered a serious decline in service delivery quality over at least the past 2 years. So this is relating to the city manager, Floyd Brink. The city manager is in many ways the most important person in the government of the city. The city manager is essentially the top bureaucrat. He is appointed by the mayor and he is responsible for ensuring that the city's bureaucracy runs correctly. Now, Floyd Brink is a controversial figure for a number of reasons, but the most recent disaster seems to have been with relating to the city's cutting off of water and electricity supplies. I think it was an electrical import business had a dispute with the city about their water bill, which in the space of 1 month jumped from 17,000 rand to 134,000 rand. They took the city to court over this. The city was found by the court to have to, that there was good reason to think that something was wrong here, that the situation needed to be rectified, and that the city had made a mistake. And the court put an injunction saying that they could not cut this guy's water off until the situation had been resolved fully. However, JMPD and Joburg Water arrived a few days ago to cut the water off, completely in violation of the court order. Then there was some to and fro's and more accessing of the courts, and eventually an arrest warrant was issued for the city manager, holding him accountable for the illegal cutting off here. This appears to have gone kind of to the most extreme level in that this morning at around 6 o'clock, the sheriff of the court arrived to arrest the city manager at his house, but was suddenly blocked by 13 unmarked vehicles and an entourage who then said that there were problems in the arrest warrant. Apparently his ID number was wrong on the arrest warrant. And also there was a typo where his name was Blink instead of Brink. Joburg Mayor Kabelo Gomanda was very aggressive in his defense, kind of saying that, quote, he has been a target of incessant harassment by certain political actors, and went on to say, given that the matter arises out of the official capacity of a city manager and his official responsibilities, it ordinarily follows that any such action, were it legal and just, shouldn't have been undertaken at the known business address of the city. It should have been undertaken at a known business address of the city, not as his private residence. This was an attempt to humiliate and embarrass him in front of his family. Then the mayor also went on to talk about suspicious leaks to the media had been used to further the narrative that the city was full of abuse and ill intent. Herman, this is odd. If the country's biggest city has its city manager arrested for something as kind of low stakes as this, kind of says some really bad things about Joburg.
Oh, yeah, undoubtedly. And perhaps to contextualize the importance of a city manager, one can almost see it in the sense that the executive mayor is sort of chairman of the board, responsible for overarching direction, strategy, with the city manager being something like a COO, a chief operating officer, someone who actually has to make the machinery of government operate to fulfill the mission, the political vision, mandate, whatever, of the government there. So this isn't just a Mandarin bureaucrat, some faceless entity that sits with a stamp. This is someone who is, to a very large extent, the hands of the mayoral office in the city. Now, Brunk himself is what one might call a shady character. In 2000, he has a record with the EFF, with suspicions of irregular procurement of security technology. He was arrested, but then not charged. And he, for some time, served as acting city manager. And when Mpopa Latse of the DA was, elected, surprising in a surprising twist as mayor, Brunk was acting city manager at the time. And the question then arose for who should be appointed permanently as the city manager. And there were two candidates in the running, Johan Mettler and Floyd Brunk. Now, Johan Mettler has since been appointed as the city manager in Tshwane, and Tshwane has, in recent reports, been identified as the city that has made the greatest progress in terms of fixing what has gone fundamentally wrong in its finances, by no means out of the water. But Mettler has a track record as a fixer. Pravin Gordhan and Tito Mboweni relied on Mettler as a civil servant in various instances to bring processes, especially financial processes, up to scratch, rooting out corruption and so on. And he was a relatively successful city manager in Nelson Mandela Bay under Athol Trollope. This is the guy that was up against Floyd Brunk, who is connected to the EFF, long-standing, almost a decade-long-standing relationship, and connected to some possibly criminal irregularities. But this is also the guy that was pushed by Action SA as their preferred city manager. In fact, Floyd Brunk rose to acting city manager, if I remember correctly, or at least close to a very high-ranking position under Herman Mashaba. So Action SA has some questions to answer here, and of course the DA as well, all political parties do. But the long and short of it is that Floyd Brunk is someone with connections that would make the pitching up of 13 unmarked vehicles to block a sheriff's arrest completely run-of-the-mill. And it exposes a sort of a worrying extent to which the politics of Johannesburg has just become mobster politics, gangsterism, truly type of activities that would make Tony Soprano scout for ideas for the next episode. So with Brunk's questionable behavior, on the other side of the coin, there is also the sort of unnatural escalation, because as lowly as I rate the current mayor of Joburg, he isn't wrong in stating that the personal accountability or holding a city manager accountable in his personal capacity is somewhat irregular. It's somewhat odd. Usually,
right. Also, the cops showing up at 6 in the morning.
Yes. If this isn't someone with a flight risk or that you want to catch red-handed, a 6 o'clock in the morning arrest spree is relatively odd. Lawyers across the board engage with sheriffs and so on, saying my client will be there at that stage. Please let's do this in a way that won't traumatize the family. You know, it's all quite run of the mill. So on both sides, you have Brink as a character that dresses like a Prohibition era gangster. And on the other side, you also have clearly some turf aggression. And if there's one takeaway to get from all this, it is that the numerical challenge of Joburg, making it fundamentally ungovernable by any true majority, except a majority that is held together by this sort of gangsterism, is a bit of a reflection on the fact that you often get what you vote for.
Yeah, it's a very unfortunate situation. And if my water goes off again for another 10 days, as it did previously, I will know perhaps some of the reasons. What the city manager might have been up to instead of fixing the water. But anyway, okay, let's go very quickly on to our last story. And this is about new opposition party Rise Umzansi, who have been talking about some of their ideas for if they get control of the Western Cape province. Their premier candidate was discussing some plans. And among ideas that they kicked around were the idea that they say they need to create bridges between communities from all backgrounds. And this involved doing things like turning military bases and golf courses in Cape Town into social housing. Now, Herman, this strikes me as fundamentally unserious, kind of populist lefty claptrap, the sort that I used to hear all the time from university professors in university, when I was at university. It doesn't really solve any problems. The problem is people being poor. The problem is people not having jobs. The problem is a government that's inefficient and doesn't work properly. There are so many issues, but getting rid of golf courses and turning them into social housing is not really a proper solution to anything.
I mean, you absolutely captured it perfectly. It's not serious. And what's even worse than this is anyone who's kept an eye on Western Cape politics should probably recognize some of this gimmickry from the previous Good Manifesto, I think in 2021 and in 2019, and even going further than back, the whole idea of this bridges thing. Someone recently read the Independent Democrats manifesto for the 2004 election. How quaint. I didn't know Rise Umzansi clone Patricia de Lille, but here we are. And the fundamental issue is, if you look at research across the world for this sort of aggressive restructuring of societal areas and residential areas, you very, very rarely see successful programs. It is romanticized as if we can just insert various socioeconomic classes together, you will sort of see an upward momentum. But that doesn't happen. That simply doesn't happen. This is short-term gimmick politics that shouldn't be taken seriously. And fundamentally, the people who will end up suffering the most from these stupid kind of policies will be the so-called beneficiaries, people who are forced to live in places the services, the jobs, the skills, they can't really either afford or compete with. This is short-term gimmickry instead of what is truly needed to address the spatial inequalities that exist, especially in places like Cape Town, with its geography just being quite cruel and economically exclusive. So while there's a real concern here about, I hate the term spatial apartheid, but it does encapsulate something that is very real, and that is distance from economic activity is a role in poverty, or plays a role in poverty. So that's true, but let's get serious. And Rise Umzansi, advocate. I mean, this just isn't serious.
Right. What has frustrated me so much about Rise Umzansi is I thought that there was a very real place for them in the South African political landscape. They could be sort of to the right of the ANC, but to the left of the DA as a kind of genuine sort of center-left party to complement something like the DA centrism and maybe, I don't know, the Freedom Front Plus or ACDP's sort of center-rightness or far-rightness, depending on who you ask. But instead, Rise Umzansi appears to have just accepted pretty much every single major contentious ANC policy I don't understand what their offering is to the people other than, no, but we'll do it better, which is a story we've heard so many times in South African politics. I just think it's just silly. Like, what's the point then? Why would anyone vote for them over the EFF or the ANC when you're going to get very similar policy recommendations in the broad scheme of things? Yeah, complete waste of potential. But we'll have to see how they do in the election. Maybe voters will disagree with me, although I suspect not. Okay, that is all the time we have for today. Hope you found this show interesting. And indeed, that's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.